Good evening, family. My name is Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a recovered alcoholic, as described in the big book. I'm from Texas, and I have learned over the years, if I'm unwilling to submit to a way other than my own, I'm probably in trouble. And in Texas, they have a way that of introducing themselves, which I thought was somewhat funny when I first got down there, but since I am from Texas, I will introduce myself in that fashion. It kind of goes like this. My name is Mark Houston. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is October 19th of 1982 because of a loving God and a fellowship and steps and probably a host of other reasons I'm not sure of. So it is good to be with you all this evening. I have been on a sabbatical from noise, talking. It began in June of 2003. I will talk with you about how that came about. When I was asked to come and spend some time with you, I spent some time in prayer because God really is funny. I got moved to do that and stop speaking and workshops and all that. And then all of a sudden, all of these, your narcissism, if you're an alcoholic, really gets tested. All of a sudden, I start getting calls. You know, I used to get calls from like Taos, New Mexico, and I start getting these calls. Iceland? No, I can't. Denmark? No, I can't. You know, just from incredible places, you know, but I was very committed to what I vow that I had taken for a while, and I felt there was a lot of reasons for that, but that was always kind of interesting. But I really felt convicted to come out and spend some time with you all, and I wasn't sure why. I was okay with a one-hour pitch or whatever terminology you use here. It's different depending on what part of the country you're in, but some places it's a lead. Some of those terms are funny, aren't they? But, you know, I went up to Fellowship of the Spirit. I had not planned on that through a series of events, and I really felt the need to connect with my AA family, the family within the family. And when I went up there, we were sitting in a house, and I was with Mike and Joe and Jaime, and then we had a meeting at 11 o'clock at night, and a whole bunch of people that I've just known for years were there, and I really realized, I started crying when I was sitting there, and one of the reasons is I just realized how much I missed my AA family, you know. I have created a fellowship around me everywhere that I have been sent to. I don't go to, nor do I. My head once in a while gives me some reason why I'm going here. But it's about carrying the message. It's period, end of statement. That's the thing. It's always been that way for me, and I'm fairly clear on that. But the connection with, I'll call it my birth AA family, because I got sober in Denver. And I really realized how much I missed it in. So it's not a coincidence I can see now why I decided to come out with here and spend some time with you. I hope that God uses me to help some of you in some way, but I assure you that you all have fed me, and I have needed to have been fed from my family within this thing, you know. To feel that love, that connection you have, if you share a common thing, you know. I was reflecting. I've known quite a few of you now for quite a few years, and it's really great connecting with you again, watching what's happened in your lives and with this power, and as you continue to grow and work with this design for living. So it's really a pleasure to be here. I want to thank the committee. I want to thank everyone who does all the grunt work so we can show up and have fun. You know, we don't think about that. I don't think those people in Smile, God Loves You tapes, and they get in their car and they make a long drive and they do all that setup so that, you know, when I'm driving down a long dusty road in Texas and I'm feeling a little lonely, I can pop in a tape and listen to some people and feel that, you know, connection again. So I just want to thank all of you who've been involved in putting this thing on. I'm going to talk just very briefly with you all about what it was like. I think I want to share with you a lot of the changes perhaps that have come about for me over the almost 22 years. I think mostly what I feel I need to share with you is really what's happened to me in the last couple years, in the sense that I think perhaps it may be of benefit to some of you, because there's a lot to be said where, you know, you're either growing or dying, and I certainly have a lot of experience with that. Some of you through tapes and other things know my story somewhat, but born and raised in Iowa and one of four boys, and I picked up a drink when I was 16, and I found God. The sense of separation that I felt, the fear, the myriad of things in ways in which I experienced myself all dissipated behind that liquid as it went down into my body, and I wasn't about to give that up. I drank alcohol for 20 years, moved around into several different states, finished high school, and then into college, and drafted and sent to Vietnam, and came back from there and got married and roared off to San Francisco. And boy, that stuff that we have going on inside that whiskey has to treat. The older I got, the more it grew. Call it a beast. I don't know what you call it, but fear beyond belief, this sense of I'm a fake, you know, all those kinds of things, those voices that talk to us, having some success with your life, but you can't measure up inside with what's starting to manifest out there, and that gap is too strong and it's too powerful. But you're acting like everything is okay. Alcoholism, I walked out of that marriage. I am not a man of regrets. Regrets means that I had choices. I don't know about you, but I got free of this delusion, drunk and sober, that I'm going through life making choices in some areas of my life. I do understand the word driven. There's a huge difference between the two, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But I didn't choose to get out of that. I was driven out of that marriage and left there, went up Seattle, Washington, and a little white powder called cocaine came into my life, and that escalated my drinking to a stratosphere that I had never experienced before. And booze was at the heart and soul of my deal, but anything that would allow me to continue to do that for days on end, I kind of liked. I couldn't stand sloppy drunks, and so if anything I could do to still give me a little bit of an edge like I had it together, I was willing to participate in. I wasn't one who went for anything that was going to take an edge off, so, you know. But so I moved up to Seattle, Washington, and from there I went up to Anchorage, Alaska, and I was a year up there, and boy, things got real crazy, and that's really when the business career began to fold, wound up ultimately in back in Colorado, and then got involved in the entrepreneurship. I had a couple of brothers doing and carrying guns and violence and drinking and just insanity. And it was all about alcoholism. Me running from me and me trying to treat me, and not, you know, the phrase asleep, dreaming, you're awake just describes so much of that. Do not misunderstand me. I had a lot of great years behind vodka. I had a lot of great years. Oh, my God. I love alcohol today more than most people drinking it. See, it was my God, and I to this day, I'm so grateful for it. I was so sober several years before Chapter 5, How It Works, the line about we have grave emotional mental disorders, before I realized that applied to me. I am so selfish, the word we applies to you. Right? And then I get sober, and you know, you start doing step work and stuff, but you got some areas of your life you're not getting better in, and you know, and you're starting to say, well, Is there a possibility I could be talking about me, that I might have some grave emotional mental disorders? Is that a possibility? And yeah, it was a big time possibility. One of the nice things about going back to Denver is I have very little recall, and this is the truth, of my first 3 years of sobriety. So they're able to fill in some blanks that I no longer pretend that I know I was doing then. And yet the insanity is, if you'd asked me in those first 3 years how I was doing, I would have said, oh, I'm doing okay, because I'm getting up and I'm sober and I'm going to meetings and I have a job. And but it literally, in hindsight, it literally was almost a blackout. When I went to make amends in Anchorage, Alaska, I was off a year in terms of when I thought I lived there. I mean, the point that I'm trying to make is that I was a daily drinker. I got out there. It's a wonder I ever came back, and I mean that. That's where alcohol, that place it took me to, and I also know that deep down inside me at a cellular level, there's a part of me on a subconscious level that if I get uncomfortable for too long, that part of me will say to me in that soft, sweet voice, I know what'll make that go away. And the sad news about that voice is that voice has no memory of any consequences I suffer about when I pick up a drink. Because, you know, my attempts at sobriety were very, very limited. I'm not a guy who came in and out and blah, blah, blah. What few attempts I had, I think the longest one lasted 2 weeks. And that little voice that rises from my subconscious that I have no say over, it has no memory of any consequences. It only has a memory of the effect produced, which is why I am beyond human aid. No human aid can tap into that place. You know, which is why really when I look back and I look a lot of the paths and the work that I have done, it is about doing the things necessary so that that little voice is not activated. So that there's a power between me and that voice saying, Mark, I understand you're in pain, and Mark, I can guarantee you I know what'll make that go away, which is some of that vodka. And knowing full well that can rise up. You know, I was sharing a little bit today, and this is the way it still is for me in this day. If I have some things going on within me that are creating dis-ease, it might be in the area of a relationship, or it might be finances, or it might be physical health, or it might be mental health, or it might be career. What I ultimately know about all of that is if that something does not change within the context of that, I will drink. I know that. So it always starts with, well, maybe it's about money, or maybe it's about this. But I get clear fairly quickly where it's really going to go if I can't get at ease and peace in this area of my life. You know, you have that connection between your selfishness, the spirituality, the creation of disease, that internal condition, that subconscious mind, call it mental obsession, kicking in, and take a drink and no recall. No recall of the length of time or the quality of my life. Just the idea that I have got to do something to get out of this pain that I am in. And by the way, I don't necessarily have to have a conscious awareness, perhaps, of that pain. So I leave Alaska. Like I told you, I went down to Colorado. And I remember vaguely remember going to a few meetings of AA, vaguely because I was drunk. What really a turning point for me is I met a gal in a bar. I didn't have a place to live. She did, so I married her in God's honest truth. I was 3 years sober, woke up and looked and said to myself, I don't even like this person. What am I doing here? And but she thought I had a drinking problem. And I'll tell you, my last year and a half... You know, my last drunk lasted a year and a half. And I vaguely remember I got 12-step by evangelical layman. I stole his Bible. I still have it. Made amends to him for that. He said I could keep it. I still have it. Of course, see, he got me because I asked him what I could do to make it right. And he said, I want you to continue to read and reread that over and over again till you really understand it. And I told him I would do that. And God's honest truth, it's sitting on me. I'm telling you, it's more worn than a big book, you know, because I told him what I was going to do. And I finally, though, had to work the steps to understand the words I was reading in that book and many other books, but because I used to just read them and go, what? No, just, you go listen to a minister and go, what'd he say? You know, wear the world like a loose garment. What, do I buy a shawl? I mean, you know, seek ye the kingdom, the rest will be added. You know, what? You know, just crazy, you know. 7 times 77, let him beat you up. You know, and then I'd do the steps, and then I'd go read, and I'd go, wow, that's what that meant. But it all came to me via the steps in the big book. You get that? See, I had to have that simplistic five-year-old language and experiences with it get taken to the place where, over time, I have devoured books, way too many, as a friend of mine would say. But so anyhow, just through a series of events, finally sitting across from a therapist who listened to me. I went in there drunk. She listened to me for 5-10 minutes and just looked me dead in the eye and said, I can't be of any help to you. You have been drinking for so long and you are so damaged that I don't think just going to AA is going to work. Here's 3 treatment centers. Get out of my office. And I was offended at that, so I went to the bar. I tell you something, the morning of October 19th of 82, I mean, the hand of God's all over this. You know, I was working as an orderly in a nursing home, cleaning up human feces, and that's just the truth. I'd take a fifth of vodka in with me, and there were 8 old men, and I weighed about 250, 260 then, and I took care of these men. I changed Pampers, and that's really an interesting thing I was doing at that time I got sober, isn't it? And because those old men didn't care if I drank, and you know, and I had a comfort zone with them. I just through a series of going into there, one morning I woke up. My belly button birthday is the 14th, and I left my place somewhere on the 13th, and I came back in the morning of the 19th. I'm not, to this day, I don't have a clue what I did. And literally the next thing I knew, I was in a detox at about 5:30 in the evening. And when I look back on it, it almost feels like this to me. It's like God had a bunch of stuff that God wanted to manifest through me and things he wanted me to do. He had given me I don't know how many signs, all of which I completely ignored because I am so consumed with myself. And it's like he said, I am so tired of waiting for any of this to work. Boom! You know, and because the obsession to drink was removed from me on that morning and has never once came back upon me. And I had nothing to do with that. Now, having the obsession to drink removed is far different than the idea that you're not going to have thoughts about drinking, right? And so I went in that place, and I was in there, I can't remember, 30, 35 days, somewhere in there. You know, there are some realities to some of that. I do remember back then in treatment, if you were in detox, they made you wear blue pajamas and little funny shoes, and you slept in this bed that was made for a five-year-old that was rubber because they didn't know if you were going to defecate and urinate. But I do remember, and they told you what time to get up and where to go to eat, and I do remember having this thought, Mark, you're 36 years old. That's a little bit old to be told what to do from the time you get up till the time you go to bed. And maybe you're not quite as smart as you think you are. You know, see, that's a major epiphany for a guy like me, is I saw this connection. You know, 36-year-olds normally aren't doing this, right? There's something going on here. I perhaps should listen. Right? Now, here was the deal. I was so disconnected from myself, I didn't even know the obsession to drink had been removed. I didn't even realize that until I was 3 or 4 months sober, sitting in a meeting one day, and I haven't drank for 4 months. Wow, how'd that happen? And, you know, it was that kind of thing. My first 2-3 years were pure Cheech and Chong stuff. Because I didn't do anything that didn't have alcohol, so what that meant is there were a lot of things I'd stop doing, like grocery shopping, movies, and you know, and I'd go to the grocery store and I'd be going down the aisles and, wow, look at that, you know, and I had a friend would be He'd say, Mark, it's been in the store for 10 years, you know. You know, and I didn't have a car, and I'd be riding the bus, and I'd hear a bird, and I'd go, whoa. You know, and you take a bite off of a sandwich, you go, wow, you know, and it's bologna or something, you know. And I'm telling you, it was like that, you know. And then, you know, I still remember I got my first car, you know. I got done and I kissed the car, you know. It's just, and I get a drive, you know. It's just, you know, and they're going to float me electricity, you know. They're going to, you understand that? See, I don't take this stuff for granted. You know, to this day, Texas Electrical Company, when I moved to Dallas, I called them up and they said, tell you what we'll do. We're going to float you electricity for 30 days because we think you're responsible enough that you're going to pay us for what we're going to float you. That's a big deal to me, right? I don't take any of that stuff for granted. When you come from where I come from, let me tell you what, I love paying bills. I'm excited about the fact that I get to pay bills, that I get to work enough for money to come in. I get to write these checks, you know. I mean, I recently went out and bought a nice new car. I decided I wanted to drive again, and I'm going to talk to you a little about an area I call financial sanity, which I am finally experiencing, thank God. And I have a budget that tells me what I can and cannot do. What a concept. Can you imagine? People say, would you like to go do this? And I say, I don't know. I need to look at my budget. You're what? It's unheard of. But that was one of the things that only happened in the last 2-3 years. So my budget said you can get a new car. And so, you know, I went out and had a ball buying a new car. And I cut the best deal, man. Nice Lincoln LS. And, you know, black, the sunroof. The seats are air-conditioned, man. You know, and an audio sound system, you know, 180 watts, 12 speakers, you know, just cranking it. You know, everything from Eminem to Creedence Clearwater Revival. You know, just, you know and it's a Mark car, man. It's black and it's hot. You know, zero to, you know, turbo. And see, I love it. I just love getting in that thing. Here's the difference. I own the car. The car don't own me. You get that? See? You know, God likes driving nice cars, man. You know? See, I don't take that for granted. You know, once a week, that goes in and gets detailed. You know, thank you, God. You know, thank you, God, I get to drive a car like that. I get to experience that, the pleasure of that. You know, what a deal. So, you know, to this day, I still don't take those things for granted, you know. But along that journey, then, of course, I ran across Don P., who a lot of you have been influenced by, as I have. And I primarily got interested in him because, you know, I saw my pal Joe getting better, and he was real sick. So, I'm not kidding. I'm the only one in this room that's known him virtually since the day he got sober. And if you think he's sick now, you should have seen him then, right? He and I don't kid ourselves about getting well. So, but I had. I saw a tremendous change in him. And funny how that works. You know, I didn't like Joe when I met Joe. I mean, I didn't like him because unbeknownst to me at that time, of course, like a lot of us, you know, he's really afraid. So how do we compensate for that, right? We're defensive. We're arrogant. We know it. You follow me? But inside, we're just scared because people who are at peace with themselves that can experience an authentic self never project any of that stuff, right? And then, of course, you know, we've developed and just really become, you know, the best of friends over the years. And what a wonderful deal that was. So I had approached Don, and he and I made that journey, you know, through the steps. And I did. I had a revolutionary spiritual experience. It was absolutely incredible. And but I look back and boy, there was a lot of things when I look back in hindsight, though, that I didn't do. I got a little bit too caught up in career and working long hours, and I had several opportunities. I had done sex inventories in terms of relationships, those kinds of things. It had been put in front of my path that you know, you might need some outside help in that area, you know. But I had fallen prey. Here's the paradox of this, by the way. I want to mention this. The big book is very clear to you and I that at some point in time, if we're smart, we probably want to seek outside help for our body and all kinds of things, right? But you know how it is with our steppers. Somehow we, our books, that's not in there. The steps, that's it. You know. Well, so I ignore all that. So I'm needless to say, having trouble in personal relationships. You know, I've been married and divorced 4 times, 2 of those in sobriety, and so I got a lot of that stuff going on. In hindsight, I don't recall I did anything with meditation. Also, I had so, and if you're not doing anything with meditation, then you get to live with the chatter of 1,000 monkeys. From the time you get up till the time you go to bed. It is not fun. And if your voices are like mine, they are not kind, gentle, and loving at all. Horrible, just unbeknownst to me. And now I have another element, and this ties into some I want to talk about in the last couple years, is I suffer and have suffered at times very extreme from PTSD, and that came from trauma, and that trauma is connected to Vietnam and a lot of other things. And I did not know that. I did not know that I suffered from that. And that began to manifest itself. And I wound up, I think it was in my 9th year, in a psychiatric hospital down in Houston, Texas. And I've been in Texas ever since. Not because I like being in the nut house, I'll tell you. But I did need to be there. I almost took myself right on out of here. I was in so much pain and did not know why. And it was many things in hindsight. It just was not the PTSD thing. It was, when I look back, it had to do with a lot of unwritten inventory. It had a lot to do with dependencies. It had a lot to do with a lot of things. It had a lot to do with still some unfinished amends. It had a lot to do with I hadn't made peace with my past in some areas. And all those things together, and I literally began to die from the inside out, literally right down to my bones. When I tell you that every cell of my body hurt. I mean, it hurt, and I didn't drink, and literally, I came. Tell you how far gone I was in that thing. I had probably been living in Texas 8-9 months. I lived in Houston for 6 months, and then I moved up to the Hill Country, up to Kerrville. And I remember going out to have a smoke, sitting on a picnic bench, and I literally felt like I was coming out of a vortex. And I remember waking up, and I look around. And I don't even know where I'm at. And then all of a sudden, I heard myself say, "What am I doing in Kerrville, Texas?" That's how deep I got into that thing, right? I came out of that and went to Kerrville, Texas, and there wasn't anyone there that we know that does the thing like we do. And so I began to create the fellowship I crave. I did a lot of work over the next 2-3 years with 1 through 9. Particularly 4, particularly 9, and really begin. I tell you what, when I look back, I tell you what I did is I took a hard look at the book and I got real honest with myself about what I had not been willing to do on a daily basis. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to do this. What do I have to lose? And I began to explore meditations and other disciplines and books and got to study with a Native American person for a couple years, reconnected with Mother Earth, and I'd lost that completely. There's nothing worse than walking the earth not realizing it's a living, breathing organism. So a lot of incredible things happened in that time period, and then wound up getting moved down to Austin, Texas. Now, here was another thing I had going on with me that I didn't... somebody just wave at me when I'm at my time limit or something. You'll wave or holler or do whatever, because it just flows through me, you know. But unbeknownst to me is about every 5 years, what was going on with me is this. I don't know how else to, I'll just call it what it is. This trauma, this PTSD stuff would get real active. Now I was asleep to this, and so here's what I did about every 5 years: is I literally would move. End or start a relationship, quit a job, begin to isolate, begin to pull back, begin to experience immense amounts of fear, burn and turn all my money. Had no idea any of this was going on. I moved up to Dallas, and I went through a period of that in Austin. Thank God I was working with a lot of people. Thank God I was. Got through that. didn't find it necessary to get married again. By the way, there's three birthdays I celebrate. October 14th is my belly button birthday. October 19th is the day I got sober. And October 25th was the last time I got divorced. So this program does work. There was a stage character in me called the husband. I went out one day and I literally dug a grave and I had to bury him. You know, he'd been around for four times. That's about enough, don't you think? You know what I'm saying? And I did, you know. You no longer exist, okay? You know, because that part of me always had to have a wife, so I'd get divorced on Friday and get remarried on Monday and couldn't figure out why I'm doing it. But I'm choosing to, right? Jeez. Driven. There's nothing worse than being sober, thinking you're making choices in all these areas of your life, right? When I awoke to the fact that perhaps I was being driven, you know. So I get up to Dallas. And once again, now the good news is over the years I'd work with a bunch of people up there. Some of you know I've done a thing called Steel and Steel for years, and I begin to do that again. There's a wonderful woman named Joanne. She's 38, 39 years sober, 78 years old, and I sponsor Joanne. She's a wonderful woman. I do Steel and Steel with her and a woman she sponsors 19 years. And then there's another man with 29 years, a man with 16. I do Steel and Steel with him because I don't want to get trapped by my blind spots anymore and by self-delusion. And so those people help me with all those kinds of things. But about... I hit Dallas, Texas, and I'm going to talk about several different things here. I'm going to talk about what I call financial sanity. I'm going to talk about what I call physical sobriety, emotional sobriety, mental sobriety, and my experience over the last couple of years and what happened to me. I resubmit to the process of the steps when I have a strong sense I need to do that. And about 2 years ago, I started to feel that blackness moving over me again. And you've had the kind of experience with that shadow that I have. And my life was great. I was working at a job that I loved. I was earning more money than I'd ever earned. I had some people around me that I liked and enjoyed. I liked where I live, you know. The fear behind that began to manifest itself. So I wrote out a prayer. It's another set-aside prayer. And begin to work with that prayer and begin to take a look at the first step. And I added one component to looking at unmanageability this time, and I want to read it so that I don't misquote, but it's really out of page 27 where Dr. Carl Jung is talking to us about what happens to us in this incredible experience. And he talks about the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding force of my lives, are suddenly cast to one side. And I said to myself, self, what ideas, emotions, and attitudes do you have going on as you look at your first step that might be contributing to what is going on? And I started looking at things. I started looking at finances. I started looking at my physical body. I started looking at some of that. And basically, what happened, and it happened very quickly, is in the first area it really showed up had to do with finances, which is I've always earned good money. But I have, you know, first of all, I never thought I'd live this long. So, you know, 2 years ago, I'm 55 years old, and, you know, say what you want, but there's this thing called retirement starting to loom, and I had done a horrible job on planning for any of that. Not because I chose to. Because I had some belief systems and attitudes in place. Although I had moral and philosophical convictions, we've known this since fifth grade. Save 10%, blah, 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 blah. You know, and we'd go around the room and get a show of hands. How many of you pulled that one off, right? But I begin to see a connection between my irresponsibility and lack of power in that area and the tremendous fear that financial insecurity will breed in you and it'll bleed into every area of your life. Every relationship you have, every phase of your life. It's been my experience with it. And I said, enough. I know this is contributing. What are you willing to submit to? Well, I did an inventory. My inventory showed me there were two major belief systems I had going on that were contributing to this. Here's the first. I'm going to win the lotto. You're laughing because you relate. The second was I'm a financial planner. I'm not. Having finally seen that truth, having seen it's not about choice, having seen I need power, I went to a financial planner and said, although I appear as though I am somewhat intelligent, I am not. Here is my financial life. I will submit to anything you tell me. And he happens to be in the program, and he said, good, we're going to separate the men from the boys. And I said, what do you mean? Because he said, you ain't going to like what I tell you. Right? He said, you are going to lead a simple life from here on out, and this thing called a budget is going to tell you what to do. I really somewhat started this process 4 years ago, but I really kicked it into high gear 2 years ago. And I'll fast forward. I want to tell you what's really happened to me over 4 years in this area. I reduced debt by almost $45,000. I socked away 15 grand into an IRA account. I have a cash reserve that has somewhere between $12,000 and $15,000, and I don't have any debt. And I want to tell you something. I walk a freer man because of that. But I'm trying to make a point here, what I call financial sanity. At some point in time, all of my spiritual insights and wisdoms weren't doing anything in this area of my life, and it was impacting me. And I got tired of it. And I said, this is not a demonstration of financial sanity, right? I think one of the reasons also why I decided it became necessary for me to take a couple of years off from not speaking is I had too many areas of my life that I felt I was not sober in. One of them was that area I just talked about. Now let's talk about some other areas. Physically. I got a pal of mine I've sponsored for years, a wonderful man named Floyd. By the way, he's the one that has been key in my financial sanity. And there's nothing worse than getting someone you've sponsored who you've been real hard on because you needed to be and going to them for counsel. Boy, did he get even. But this is the power of amends. He made amends to a woman that he almost married in college that he hadn't seen in 31 years that he finally found. And made that amends, and this was a woman he deeply loved. And to the amazement of both of them, they discovered that they still loved each other. There was one little problem. She was a master level therapist and is a very healthy woman, and she observed right away that he was probably one of the most obsessive compulsive human beings she had ever met. I used to send this guy an email and ask him a question, I get 9 pages back. You know, just it was unbelievable. So she suggested to him, she said, I work with a woman. She's in her late 70s. She's been doing a holistic physical health thing for years and years and years. She does all this off of hair analysis. She basically said, if you won't submit to this, and we can test, we can see where you're at with all this, your physical body, and if you won't submit to this, I can't go out with you. I can't. Your OCD stuff is just too crazy, man. And so once he got over being offended, he said, sure, I'll do that. So he called me, and he went over this 2 pages of test results and started taking these holistic natural supplements. Well, within about 3 weeks, I noticed this guy. I would call him, and first of all, I didn't even recognize his voice was slow. There was one thought at a time. When I'd get an email, I'd ask him a question. He'd send back and go, yes or no. And I said, you know, I mean, I'm Norwegian alcoholic. I'm not an idiot. When I see that big of a shift going on. So I started talking to him about that. So I said, I'm going to submit to that. See, you go back to these steps and you're going to get open-minded. That means you better let go of what it's going to look like in terms of where your help's coming from, right? So my help is starting to come outside the rooms, isn't it? You get this? See? Thank God. And so anyhow, I said, sure, I'll do this bizarre thing. And see, I didn't know that my hair was a history of my life since birth. I didn't know that. So I send in this hair, and then I get back my 2 pages. And physically, a lot of it was okay, but I had some major areas that were somewhat problematic. But then most of all is this woman also has a means of looking at grave emotional mental disorders. So I get this back, and I told you about this PTSD thing, and you're looking for a number of 10, right? PTSD, 27, right? You're looking for 10. Depression, 22. We got trouble, I think, here. And I called her, and so I'm talking to her because we set up a three-way with this doctor. Doctor, it used to be a doctor of conventional medicine who saw that didn't do much and decided they would start addressing the problem instead of the symptom. So I'm doing this three-way call, and she said to me, she said, how are you functioning? I said, what are you talking about? She said, I've never known anyone with those numbers that's not hospitalized somewhere. And I said, well, ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing, you know. See, when this is normal, you know how drinking and puking was normal? Well, this was normal, right? She said, oh, Mark, God bless you. We can help you, right? So I start taking natural supplements, and I can't even begin to tell you what a difference it made. I can tell you today that there's another piece about the speaking issue. I've been on these things about 6 months, and again, they're just natural supplements based on the needs of my body. And I sent in my hair again, and this PTSD was like still at 25. So I went down, and the woman in Louisiana said she wanted to meet me, the older woman who had done all this. And this woman, like I said, was in her late 70s. I met her. She looks like she's about 50, and these eyes are just incredible woman. So she started asking me what I was doing while I'm talking then about, you know, I do workshops and I do this and then. So we get done, and she's shaking my head. She said, if you ever want this to get better, you must stop. You must stop. She said, she's been working with us, just so you know, for a long time. And she said, most of you have had extreme trauma and you're going around and you're doing all these things and it's triggering yours. It will never get better. Now, I said the set-aside prayer, didn't I? You know, because I hadn't firmly made a commitment then at that time. And then she said something else, which made me angry. She said, it also feeds your narcissism, which is very high, by the way. And I said, okay, Joan, you got it. And she was right. She was absolutely right on all counts. And I was willing to submit to that process. So that began a journey there. And then she said, look, here's another deal. And I said, what's that? And she said, if you know, there's a woman that I know in New Orleans who is a specialist in this. And she said, the easiest way I can explain it to you, because she talked her language and I talk the language we talk, is she said, you have some stuff in you at a cellular level this woman can help you get, that will help you get out of. And all the prayer and all the meditation and everything else that you do hasn't touched it and will not touch it. Are you willing to consider doing that? I said, I'm willing to consider doing anything, because I was beginning to experience myself unlike I had ever experienced myself before. You know, most of you don't know this. You've known me over the years, but you don't know that when I would go and I would do a weekend, you don't know that you didn't know what was going on inside me. You didn't know the fear. You didn't know that I was saying to myself, why am I here? You didn't know any of that. You experienced me the way you experienced me because God does what God does. But you didn't know what I was experiencing. And I was tired of that. And I said, I'll do anything. Sign me up. Rock and roll. Because I'm willing to submit to a way other than my own. And when you've done the kind of things I've done with the steps or whatever, you get open-minded. And I did. I went down to New Orleans. I spent 11 hours with this woman. And what I will tell you, to this day, I don't have a clue what we did. And I mean that. I really don't have a clue what we did. I will tell you this, is for about 1 month, I had a peace beyond anything that I could have ever imagined. Now, what began to happen is some things slowly started to come back a little bit, but I experienced a peace that I had been looking for most of my life and in sobriety that I never experienced before. Why? Because I got open-minded. Why? Because I resubmitted to these steps. Except it showed up in a way, because I'm a step worker, and that sometimes gives me Seabiscuit blinders, right? You know? And I want to determine what it looks like, and you know, but the longer I'm sober, the more open-minded I get. And she said something else. She said, by the way, now that we're done talking about this, would you like to know why you continually kept getting married and blah, 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 blah? And I said, yeah, I'd be open to that. And So she shared some information. She said, I'm going to give you the names of some people. In particular, there's a woman up in Dallas. She's in her late to mid-60s, and she works a lot in terms of relationships, and she works with people that suffer from sex and love addiction. That's a result of trauma, and I want you to go see her. And, you know, it's so funny. I mean, I love this thing, this process we're in, because you can imagine what I'm telling myself. And I looked at her and said, I'll go do it, right? And I did, and I've been doing that the last 15 months. And I want to tell you something about all this step work and everything else I did before. From the first time I saw this woman, I got a connection with this woman, and all she is, she's part of my team. You know, today, I didn't realize this, but in the last 2 years, God surrounded me with a team in areas that I needed a team. I needed a team to help me get these finances so I could experience financial sanity. I needed a team to help me on the physical so I could experience physical sobriety, right? I needed a team over here in terms of the mental and emotional, and it all came in my way. You know? But I remember going to this very first meeting with this woman. And I just gotten back from doing that thing down in Memphis. Joe and I did a deal down there with like 200 people. And this woman, she barely said hi, because she had gotten the background on me, you know, and so she had an idea who I was. And she said to me, tell me how you experienced yourself when you were down there, right? And so I relate to how I experienced myself. And then what still came out of me is this part of me said it, but they're going to find out. She said, you know what that's about? And I said, no. And she said, that's about shame. And I said, oh, no, we got us another journey going down here, don't we? And boy, I tell you what, she was right. She was absolutely right. And she and I went to work. And thank God for all the step works, because I'd go in and sit down with this woman, 61-year-old Norwegian woman, you know, just been there and done that, and just calm and giggles and laughs, you know, really at peace with herself. And I connected dots, and I left those sessions so empowered, I can't even begin to tell you. She connected more dots because of everything else I had done. It was just absolutely incredible. And I'll tell you how much this has changed. I had begun work 7 years ago, me and my pal Floyd, on a book, and the book flowed through us with no thought. We worked on it for 2 months, but, you know, you guys will appreciate this because you're Fellowship of the Spirit people. This was the only way, you know. And it's like God said, that book ain't getting out there, right, you know. That's about separation once again. So it went cold case file for about, you know. And finally, about a year ago, through a lot of just things that have been happening to me and through me, I began to write again. And we finally finished that book, and didn't even know we'd finish it. And then we wound up submitting that book, and that book got accepted for publication. And that book just got published. And but I got to tell you this: I went down in it's still pretty trippy to me, you know. You see this book, and it's got your name, and it's like... That's because there's this part of me, you see, that doesn't deserve anything. When the book talks about this idea of emotions and ideas and attitudes cast aside, I didn't know this. I didn't know any of this. I'm giving life and sobriety my best shot, and I got all this stuff going on I don't know about, right? How could I move to the light when you got that stuff going on, see? And I didn't know I had that going on. And because I've avoided the light far more than the dark. The dark and the shadow is a place that I had a high level of comfort with, but God forbid you put me in the light, right? God forbid you let God manifest through me in the way God would like to, with a sense of peace and ease and calm with that. But I went in to see her again, and she asked me another question. She said, I want you to tell me how you experienced yourself when you looked at that book that God wrote through you. And I said, well, I said, you know, I experienced tremendous gratitude, tremendous humility. I said, I was proud of the work that I put in. And I said, just a tiny bit of shame. I'm getting better, aren't I? And she said, yeah, you are getting better. God, ladies and gentlemen, I didn't have any idea of any of this shit was going on, right? love God with all your heart. You know, the sense of separation I used to have from people, it's gone. It's gone, you know. That incredible piece Bill Wilson writes on emotional sobriety, boy, can I ever relate to that one, you know. So I guess the bottom line is, as I look at it all, is, you know, we do make spiritual progress. There is no arrival place. You know, it's circular. It just keeps turning inward, you know. I will tell you this, that my capacity to love today, my capacity to be intimate, my compassion for myself, you know. This morning in meditation, Herb used a word of brokenness, and that probably is the word to describe those parts of us that I drink behind, or those parts of us that's sober that still separate me from you and don't allow that light to come through in me. I think that's probably a good word, and the necessity of having God to massage that, the necessity of having you to massage that, because you understand me, see? And to watch that start to heal over time and over the years, and the things that used to separate you begin to dissipate. And your compassion for yourself, your freedom from judgment of yourself begins to go away, and that means then that goes and extends to everyone else, you know? The prayer of St. Francis today, I can actually practice at a level that I've never been able to practice before. But you know, it just took what it took. You know, thank God, my capacity to love today. I realize I live in a world of impermanence, and then I have this mind that wants everything to be permanent. And what my deep understanding of impermanence is that if I get time with you, I better value it because I may not see you again. I've gone to 4 funerals this year. I went to 2 in the last 2 months. One was a young man who died of a drug overdose. One was a young 23-year-old woman who did heroin from 14 to 21, came to the treatment center I work at. She picked up a 2-year chip 2 months ago. She had diagnosed with cancer. She died in 2 months. The day she died, she called me. I'm talking to her. Her sponsor's there. And she's crying because she can't go make her amends. And I told her that her sponsor and myself would be a conduit to finish her amends work. You know, and that funeral, her funeral, was a celebration of life, sobriety. You know, the other funeral, the 21-year-old who died of the drug overdose, was darkness beyond belief. You know, God, we have been given such great things here. Do not miss out on this stuff, you know. For God's sake, stay involved with this stuff. Stay involved with the steps. Stay involved with people who want to make this a design for life. Quit being so damn hard on yourself, you know. Stay open-minded. Go to retreats. Go to monasteries. Seek out what these other people know. Hey, this is kindergarten stuff, you know. Go find out what the grown-ups do with this stuff, you know. Great stuff. Are we getting close to the end? Whatever. All right, couple more things. I tell you, I've been silent for about 15 months. It's difficult talking. She's waving at me. She's holding up 10 fingers instead of 2. We're doing better, aren't we? Right? We're doing better. You know, your reflection on the third, I think of my third step prayer. You know, God, I offer myself to thee. Dwell with me and do with me as thou wilt. And I trust that so much today. It doesn't always mean I have to like it, you know, where I live and, you know, who's in my life. And, you know, I tell you another little thing. There's a lady in my life I've been going out with, I guess, for a little over 5 months. You know, I realized she took me out to the airport. And on the way out there, I started to choke up. Because I cry pretty easily. Because when you get authentic, if you cry, you cry. Right? And I realized it's because I was going to miss her. Now, I've been way too sociopathic for too many years to... And I said, wow, this is, what an, the sweetness of this. You know, what an incredible thing. And I realized we haven't had one cross word in 5 months. She has a nickname for me. She calls me Shallow Mark. She's funny. She says, oh, you're going to go out and do all that spiritual stuff, aren't you? You know? I know the real you, you know. Just, you know, you do this work and what you draw into your life changes. Changes. You know, you the capacity to just love and truly expect nothing back is, maybe that's why we haven't had a crossword, you know. You know, my capacity to be considerate, you know, when we, because we normally see each other on weekends and flowers and just cards and things I could never do before. Not because I chose not to. Do you see the point I'm trying to make about some of this? I'm trying to wake some of you up to something. If you have some areas of your life like I did that there wasn't sobriety and financial sobriety or physical or whatever, if you have some things like that, first of all, maybe embrace the idea that maybe you aren't choosing to live life in that fashion and become willing to resubmit yourself to the process of the steps again in whatever that looks like to maybe bring about a power that will show up in your life to bring you into sobriety in those areas. Longer I'm around, I realize, you know, the first 9 steps are a launching pad to live in 10, 11, and 12, and really that's when the work starts and everything else that makes up me as a, you know, as a human being, you know, with the capacity to embrace the wonder of life and the sweetness of life, you know. I leave here. I've got to leave early tomorrow morning to go back, so I won't see most of you again. I want you to know that I love you. I am glad you are in my life and part of my family. God bless you.